content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello again, this is Randall Rickman from North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Time Magazine. The current edition is dated February 10th, 2020. The cover story is Kobe Bryant, 1978 to 2020. The illustration on the cover shows Kobe Bryant taking a bow. He's wearing his dark blue road jersey for the Los Angeles Lakers. On the back of his jersey is the name Bryant and the number 24, and he is taking a bow. To make sure that we include this story in our reading session today, I'm going right to that cover story. Cover story written by Sean Gregory, who writes, Jerry West saw something the other basketball mavens didn't. Everyone around the league was intrigued by the slender high school senior with NBA genes and confidence to spare. But could Kobe Bryant really go directly from leading the Lower Merion High School Aces in suburban Philadelphia to guarding Michael Jordan? It took West, then executive vice president of the Los Angeles Lakers, and one of the best players in NBA history, less than a half hour to know the answer. As part of a workout ahead of the 1996 draft, Bryant played one-on-one against the recently retired defensive specialist Michael Cooper. The GM ended the session early, quote, I was embarrassed for Michael to watch a 17-year-old just basically demolish him, unquote, West tells Time, quote, and enjoy doing it, unquote. West acquired Bryant in a draft day deal, pairing the teenager with the towering Shaquille O'Neal and launching one of the most decorated careers in professional sports. Over 20 seasons, all of them with the Lakers, Bryant won 5 NBA championships, 2 scoring titles, a pair of Olympic gold medals, 1 MVP award, and was named to 18 All-Star teams. More than merely guarding Jordan, Bryant emerged as his heir, a scoring assassin who could rip a defender's heart out by way of a devastating dunk or an elusive fadeaway jump shot from the baseline, his singular work of athletic art. His ascent coincided with the development of social media and basketball's embrace around the world, which turned Bryant into one of the game's first truly global stars. Back home, he inspired a generation of high school phenoms like LeBron James to follow his lead from high school to the NBA. Quote, you said Kobe, and everyone knows who that is. A one-word name, unquote, says Quentin Richardson, who played against Bryant in the 2000s. Driven by a focus and intensity that he would come to call and trademark Mamba mentality, Bryant had the rare combination of elite talent and preternatural fire seen only in the true greats. Quote, Kobe played the game, unquote, says West, quote, like it was war, unquote. When Bryant retired in 2016, he had scored 33,643 points, good for fourth on the NBA's all-time scoring list. He was in third until January 25th, when James passed him. Bryant called James and sent a congratulatory tweet. The next day, Bryant was gone. The helicopter he was taking to his daughter's youth basketball tournament crashed in the hills near Calabasas, California. All 9 people on board were killed, including Bryant's 13-year-old daughter, Gianna, known as Gigi, and two other young girls. Bryant had begun using helicopters as a player to avoid L.A. traffic on his commutes to home games. And to give him more time with his wife, Vanessa, and their children. The crash is still under investigation, though the National Transportation Safety Board said the helicopter was not equipped with a terrain warning system that could have alerted the pilot to danger. The loss was one of the most stunning in the history of sports and global celebrity that Bryant had done so much to fuse. To many, it was as if a vein had been opened. NBA players wept publicly. On Weibo, one of China's largest social networks, the hashtag for Bryant's death drew nearly 2.5 billion views in a day. Former President Barack Obama said, quote, Kobe was a legend on the court and just getting started in what would have been just as meaningful a second act, unquote. And world leaders from Israel to Venezuela shared their own condolences. Murals of Bryant with his daughter appeared in states from Texas to Massachusetts. Across the Philippines, skyscrapers lit up in tribute. In Los Angeles, thousands gathered to cry and light candles outside the downtown Staples Center, quote, the house that Kobe Bryant built, unquote, as host Alicia Keys called it, on the top of a notably subdued Grammy Awards held in the area that night. Correction, arena that night. It has become a gathering place for Bryant's legions of fans who come bearing jerseys and balls, much the way Buckingham Palace overflowed with flowers following the death of Princess Diana. Reactions to Bryant's death have deepened to reflect the dimensions and sometimes confounding complexity of his life. Though not cut down in the prime of his basketball career, Bryant at 41 was well into a second act that gave him more prominence than many active players. He had already written an Oscar-winning animated short film, launched a production company, created a sports academy, and became a vocal champion of women's sports. Quote, I absolutely believe he was going to do great things, unquote, says Richardson, quote, and write another chapter of greatness after basketball, unquote. And he died being a parent. As word emerged that Gigi had been killed with him, queasiness was compounded by recognition. Every weekend, parents travel with their children to organized youth sporting events, just like Bryant was doing with the second of his four daughters. Suddenly, people who did not know Bryant or particularly care for him could picture themselves in his place and choke up. To toggle between Instagram and Twitter in the days after January 26th was to experience the social media version of Awake. Gigi dangling from her father's shoulders or parked above them, her hands resting on his head. The two sitting courtside, exploring the nuances of the game. Bryant's biography included another critical element. In 2003, he was arrested and charged with sexual assault. The criminal case was dropped after Bryant's accuser refused to testify in court. A civil suit ended with a settlement. Bryant issued a statement of apology, which read in part, quote, after months of reviewing discovery, listening to her attorney, and even her testimony in person, I now understand how she feels that she did not consent to this encounter. Unquote. The case failed to derail Bryant's career, and by the time he retired, it tended to be mentioned reluctantly, if at all, in assessments of his legacy. In the era before Me Too, an NBA superstar could commute between games and court appearances without apparent consequence. Sharing this page is a mini-article under the heading of Viewpoint. The headline is, Coming to Terms with a Complicated Life. Mini-article by Yvette Dion. And Time says, Dion is the editor-in-chief of Bitch Media and the author of the forthcoming book, Lifting as We Climb, Black Women's Battle for the Ballot Box. And she writes, In the wake of Kobe Bryant's untimely death at 41, the usual cascade of emotions set in. Disbelief, shock, sadness, and, for some, anger. That last emotion was born not from what was said about the superlative basketball star and doting father, but what wasn't. Rarely did the outpouring of tributes stop to acknowledge that amid the many wonderful accomplishments, Bryant did something horrific. In July 2003, Bryant was charged with sexually assaulting a 19-year-old employee of the Lodge and Spa at Cordillero in Edwards, Colorado. He admitted that he didn't explicitly ask for consent and initially denied even having sex with the woman. He left a bruise on her neck and drew blood from her skin. After Bryant's defense team badly intimidated the victim and smeared her reputation, she refused to testify. After the criminal case was dismissed, Bryant issued an apology that said, in part, quote, After months of reviewing discovery, listening to her attorney, and even her testimony in person, I now understand how she feels that she did not consent to this encounter, unquote. He later settled for an undisclosed sum in a civil suit. It is irresponsible to excuse or gloss over Bryant's treatment of this woman or his complicity in a legal strategy that upended her life. But it is also reductive to focus only on this behavior when reflecting on his life and death. When I learned of the helicopter crash, I immediately thought about my older brother yelling, quote, Kobe, unquote, whenever he threw makeshift paper basketballs into a trash can. I thought about Bryant's widow, Vanessa, and their fatherless daughters, who now have to move through life with a hovering cloud of grief. I thought about the many black children and families who saw Bryant as a model of possibility. And I thought about the woman who accused Bryant of rape, having to watch her perpetrator being valorized for eternity. The Me Too movement has helped equip us with more nuanced understanding of sexual violence. A person can be good to their spouse and their children, donate lots of money to worthy causes, and create indelible work that influences, and also be a monster. And yet, it's still difficult to process legacy in the face of tragedy. Thanks to the pressures of social media, on which we react to unfathomable news in real time, we often fall into a binary of good or bad, wrong or right, on the side of survivors or on the side of a rapist. It is rarely that simple. Bryant, aged and matured, became an ambassador for women's sports, coached his daughter's basketball team, and took pride in being a, quote, girl dad, unquote. But none of his commitments to his children, to women's sports, to a more equitable world, negate his culpability. we must confront the tragedy that has befallen Bryant and his family, understand the greatness he exhibited on the court, and finally, maybe for the first time, reckon with the irreparable trauma he inflicted. When we are wedded to specific narratives of how feminists are supposed to act, it can all be too easy to disregard humanity. But feminism, at least the tradition I follow, makes space for redemption, too. Only Brian's accuser can decide if she forgives him. And it's not our place to do that work publicly on her behalf. What we can do is complicate these conversations so we can usher in more honesty about who's elevated in the aftermath of a sexual assault and how fame and money insulate perpetrators from being brought to account. We can do this while still acknowledging that Bryant did not deserve to die in such a manner at such an age, and that the people who loved him are grieving. That was the entire side article entitled Coming to Terms with a Complicated Life, written by Yvette Dion. That was listed as Viewpoint. Now going to the beginning of the magazine, we are now at the regular lead feature For the Record, a one-page collection of tiny news items, each one illustrated by a two-color drawing, a caption or headline in bold, or a combination of the two. In the upper right corner of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation in all caps, bold, and in black, a quotation from George Takei, actor, on the January 24th unveiling of the U.S. military's new Space Force seal and its similarity to the insignia of Star Trek's fictional Starfleet Command. And the quotation from actor George Takei, quote, "Is nothing sacred?" unquote. In the right middle margin of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Mary Louise Kelly, NPR host, quoting from her discussion with U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo after they clashed during an interview. The quotation from Mary Louise Kelly, quoting U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, quote, "He asked, quote, 'Do you think Americans care about Ukraine?' unquote, unquote." Time's caption goes on to say Pompeo accused her of lying about their exchange. The lower right corner of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation in red from Margaret S. Chin, New York City Council member, in a January 27th statement after a fire tore through a building housing the archives of the Museum of Chinese in America. The quotation from Margaret S. Chin, quote, "It's difficult to describe the pain and loss the Chinatown community is feeling, but we will not be broken," unquote. The lower left corner of the page is a story illustrated by the numerical statistic in red, 80. Caption explains, "Number of pythons captured in the Everglades during the 2020 Python Bowl, according to a January 25th Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission announcement. The annual event raises awareness of the threat posed by the invasive species, 80 pythons." This item is also accompanied by a red, black, and white illustration showing a worker bagging a python, lifting them from an entire gully full of other pythons. The worker is black and white, pencil drawing, and the pythons are red. in the middle left margin of the page is the feature within a feature, bad week, good week. At bad week, carpool lanes, Arizona police cited a man for driving in the HOV lane with a fake skeleton as a passenger. Under good week, traffic lights. A group of Florida friends went viral with a video of themselves playing Uno at a long red light. Uno, or you know. At the upper left margin of the page, in the corner, is a story illustrated by a quotation from Vanessa Nakate, Ugandan climate activist, in a January 24th tweet. After being cropped out of an Associated Press photo of climate activists, among whom she was the only person of color in Davos, Switzerland. And the quotation from Ugandan climate activist Vanessa Nakate, quote, "Why did you remove me from the photo? I was part of the group," unquote. Time's caption goes on to say the news agency apologized. And that news agency, the Associated Press. In the lower center of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Iris Guardiola, 82, speaking to the Associated Press at a January 23rd protest in Puerto Rico, demanding the resignation of Governor Wanda Vazquez over the U.S. territory's handling of disaster aid. And a quotation from Iris Guardiola, 82, quote, "The people are tired of the abuse," unquote. In the upper middle of the page is a story illustrated by the numerical statistic, in red, 97,112. Caption explains, number of gallons of red wine that spilled into a creek from a winery in Sonoma County, California, after a blending tank door popped open on January 22nd. 97,112 gallons of red wine. This item is accompanied by a red, white, and black illustration showing two frogs, and they are in a creek, and there is a wine bottle pouring red wine into their wet habitat, and one of the two frogs appears to be very inebriated and passed out. That's the entire content of the For the Record page. That brings us to, now in the brief, the major section that opens the magazine. And we rarely describe photographs in this reading, but the photograph here on this page is explained in detail by the caption. The title of the caption is Never Forget. And then the caption goes on to say, a guard tower at Auschwitz looms during a January 27th ceremony to mark the 75th anniversary of the liberation of the Nazi death camp in southern Poland, where roughly 1.1 million people, most of them Jews, were murdered during World War II. More than 200 Holocaust survivors attended the ceremony, along with heads of state and dignitaries. Quote, do not be indifferent when any minority suffers discrimination, unquote, warned Auschwitz survivor Marion Tursky, 93. And the photograph is taken at night, and the guard tower mentioned in the caption is illuminated from below, and the illumination also casts upon trees which tower over the guard tower itself. Sharing this page, the mini feature called The Bulletin, where the headline is, Britain sides with China in technology Cold War. Item by Billy Perigo, who writes, in the battle over the next generation of telecommunications, China is winning. On January 28th, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson decided not to ban hardware made by the market-leading Chinese firm Huawei as the UK builds out its infrastructure for 5G wireless technology. The choice was a blow to the Trump administration, which has waged a months-long campaign to persuade allies to shun Huawei and just lost its closest ally. And here, Billy Perigo mentions three items of concern. First item, sensitive topic. Although Johnson needs a post-Brexit trade deal with the U.S., he also promised voters a revolution in internet speed and coverage. His decision not to ban Huawei, despite warnings of the risk of spying by Beijing, reflects the importance states are placing on the competitive advantage in internet infrastructure. Huawei is to be limited to a maximum 35% role in the periphery of the UK's 5G network, away from sensitive sites like nuclear plants. But on January 29th, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo still urged Britain to reconsider its decision. Second item of concern, risky business. In Germany, the same trade-off between economic growth and security is clear, with an added current of fear over Chinese retaliation. Parenthetically, an estimated 900,000 German jobs depend on exports to China. Quote, I don't think we can quickly build a 5G network in Germany without Huawei taking part, unquote, German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer said on January 18th. And while new EU guidelines allow members to exclude, quote, high-risk, unquote, 5G providers, they stop short of recommending a ban on Huawei. Third and final item of concern, new era. For the past century or more, the cutting edge of technology has been dominated by the U.S. and its allies. Now, thanks to years of research and design subsidized by the Chinese government, Huawei's hardware is cheaper and faster than that of its rivals. That could have lasting effects across the board for U.S. diplomacy. And as China's sway grows, the Washington-London link is unlikely to be the only special relationship to come under strain. Entire item written by Billy Perigo. Sharing this page is the regular feature news ticker in the right margin, a three-item collection of news, and each item is stacked one on top of the other. Top item, billions of locusts swarm East Africa. Kenya is suffering its worst locust plague in 70 years as an insect infestation sweeps across farmland, destroying crops meant to feed millions of people. The UN warned that the locust population could grow up to 500 times after March rains unless pesticides are quickly deployed. Middle item. States sue over 3D printed gun rule. 20 states and Washington, D.C., filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration on January 23rd over a federal rule change they say will allow schematics for 3D printed guns to be posted online, where critics argue they could be used by anyone to make untraceable weapons. Final item. Lawyer, colon, Prince not helping Epstein probe. The U.S. attorney looking at a possible sex trafficking by associates of Jeffrey Epstein, or Epstein, accused the UK's Prince Andrew on January 27th of offering, quote, zero cooperation, unquote, to the investigation, despite his promise to assist. Andrew, who was accused of having sex with a teenage trafficking victim, has denied any wrongdoing. That was the entire content of News Ticker. Still in the brief, we are now at the milestones page where the lead item is under died Jim Lehrer, eminent anchor. Observance by Bob Schieffer. Time says, Schieffer, a veteran CBS News reporter, was an anchor of Face the Nation for 24 years. Bob Schieffer, writing about Jim Lehrer, writes, in 1963, I worked as a reporter at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and Jim Lehrer worked at the Dallas Times-Herald, and we both covered the Kennedy assassination. But it was only after we came to Washington, D.C. that we became good friends. Jim, who died January 23rd at 85, was a guy I always looked up to. So when I was chosen to moderate my first presidential debate in 2004, he was the first person I called. I said, quote, how do I do this, unquote? And he said, quote, remember, it's not about you, unquote. That was the best advice anybody could possibly give me. And for every person down through the years who called me to ask for advice on how to moderate a presidential debate, I told them the same. The integrity and the objectivity he displayed had set the tone for those debates, not just one, but all of them. Jim had great respect for his viewers and for his readers. He thought they should be allowed to make up their minds, and he didn't try to push his views. He just asked the questions, and he always did his homework. That sometimes is a little rare these days, but I still think that's what reporters are supposed to do. I mean this literally. He was the most objective person I have ever dealt with. And what you saw on television was exactly what you'd see if you ran into Jim in the grocery store. He was a real person. Sometimes people you see on TV aren't. We don't run around telling people that. I'll rephrase that for clarity. We don't run around telling people that, but we all know. And he was the real deal. Jim Lehrer, observance by Bob Schieffer. This item is accompanied by a half-length candid photo. Caption says, Lehrer at his office in Arlington, Virginia in 2008. Under awarded, New Kid, first Newbery Medal for a graphic novel. Observance by Raina Telgemeier. Time says Telgemeier is the Eisner Award-winning author of the best-selling graphic novel Guts. And she writes, when Jerry Craft became the very first graphic novelist to receive a Newbery Medal, he shattered a glass ceiling for cartoonists who have long been looked at as producing, quote, lesser, unquote, literature than their prose writing siblings. I am so proud of him. The January 27th announcement that the prestigious prize for American children's literature will go to his New Kid, the story of a seventh grader who doesn't fit in at his mostly white private school, is a victory for Jerry and for the art form of comics. Jerry's win, after many, many years of hard work, proves once and for all that comics and graphic novels are real books real reading, and really and truly deserve shelf space front and center. It has been a joy to watch sequential art evolve and to see the warm reception graphic novels have received from young readers and awards committees alike. How joyous that when children read New Kid in decades to come, they will feel the tactile merit of the golden sticker on its cover. Observance by Raina Telgemeier, commemorating author Jerry Kraft. Under Arrested, Charles Lieber, the chair of Harvard's chemistry department, arrested on January 28th for allegedly lying about his ties to a Chinese government program designed to recruit foreign scientific experts. Lieber has previously denied the affiliation. Under Spotted, three Bolivian Cochrane frogs, a rare species with translucent skin, spotted by conservationists for the first time in 18 years, according to reports, January 28th. Under Released, U.S. environmental journalist Philip Jacobson on January 24th, after being jailed for 3 days in Indonesia, for allegedly violating the terms of his visa. Advocates called his arrest an attack on press freedom. Under Captured, fugitive former Colombian Senator Aida Merlano in Venezuela, captured on January 27th, nearly 4 months after she escaped custody during a dentist visit while serving a 15-year sentence for vote buying. Under Sentenced, Libyan militant Mustafa al-Imam, sentenced to more than 19 years in prison on January 23rd for his role in the 2012 Benghazi attacks. Under Sued, imprisoned former pharmaceutical executive Martin Shkreli, sued by federal and New York State authorities for alleged anti-competitive practices on January 27th. That was the entire content of the Milestones page. On the Facing page, the heading is Postcard, and the headline is, At Weinstein Trial, Drama Gives Way to, quote, Rape Myths, unquote. Weinstein or Weinstein. Article by Melissa Chan, and she writes, Harvey Weinstein's New York City rape and sexual assault trial opened in dramatic fashion. Lines formed before dawn outside the Lower Manhattan courthouse. Protesters bellowed for justice for Weinstein's accusers. A list of possible witnesses promised potential jurors a glimpse of Hollywood A-listers. But, as testimony in the former Miramax chief's trial entered its second week, something other than celebrity took center stage. The myths surrounding sexual assault, including society's assumptions about victim behavior. And, while Judge James Burke insisted at the start that this case would not be, quote, a referendum on the Me Too movement, unquote, the issues that came to the fore as a result of that movement have dominated much of the testimony. Quote, the idea that women respond to sexual assault by screaming, yelling, punching, biting, although that happens, it's rare, unquote, forensic psychiatrist Barbara Ziv explained from the witness stand on January 24th. Ziv, that's spelled Z-I-V, Ziv, an expert witness for the prosecution, dismissed the, quote, rape myths, unquote, that she said society clings to, that most assaults are committed by strangers, that victims scream and try to run away, and that they immediately report assaults. the day before, defense attorney Donna Rotuno had quizzed the first accuser to take the stand, actor Annabella Sciorra, about her behavior on the night more than 25 years ago when she says Weinstein pushed his way into her apartment and raped her. Throughout her questioning, Rotuno touched on issues that Weinstein hopes will cast doubt in jurors' minds, including why Sciorra didn't immediately call the police, 911, or a hospital after the alleged attack. While Sciorra's alleged attack occurred too long ago for Weinstein to be charged with raping her, the actress' testimony is key to prosecutors' attempts to show a pattern of abuse. Parenthetically, the actual charges he is facing in this trial stem from an alleged rape in 2013 and an alleged sexual assault in 2006. Weinstein denies all allegations of non-consensual sexual contact. Prosecutors got a boost when two of Sciorra's friends, fellow actor Rosie Perez and former model Kara Young, testified about what Sciorra had done and said to them at the time. Weinstein, appearing to chew gum, watched the testimony quietly as the 7-man, 5-woman jury listened intently and took notes. But as the trial delved into these crucial questions about sexual trauma and its often paralyzing effect on victims, fewer people were watching than before. While spectators had at first queued up to gain access to the trial, interest appeared to drop after opening statements. Instead of a crushing crowd, there were empty seats in the courtroom. The protesters who gathered outside the courthouse during jury selection had disappeared, and Weinstein arrived without having to listen to demonstrators' cries for his conviction. Article by Melissa Chen. Now moving forward, the subheading here is The Risk Report, where the headline is, Trump's Middle East plan acknowledges Israel's supremacy. Article by Ian Bremmer. The Trump administration's Israel-Palestine peace plan tears up the playbook of prior U.S. policy. Rather than fairness, it is built upon the recognition of Israeli power on the ground and shifts in the region's geopolitics. With continued expansion over the past two decades, Israelis have been making the West Bank their own. The plan also underscores the reality that Palestinian leaders have lost the active support of much of the Arab world, many of whose leaders would like to work more closely with Israel on countering Iran and other initiatives. For Palestinians, the plan imposes Israeli bargaining positions from earlier negotiations. A nominally sovereign state of Palestine with the capital on the outskirts of East Jerusalem. Both Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his chief rival, Benny Gantz, are on board. The Trump team is wagering that more geopolitical honesty will change the game of the region. Previous U.S. governments presented themselves as neutral arbiters between Israelis and Palestinians. Neither side took that claim seriously. This new deal aims to contain rather than reduce Israeli settlements, giving Palestinians a smaller plot of land for their state, about 70% of the West Bank. Once the plan is formally implemented by the Israeli government, Israel would freeze settlement construction for 4 years in areas that would become the state of Palestine. Taken within the context of the rest of Trump's foreign policy, this deal is an outlier. The plan is detailed and thoughtful, unlike the agreement announced with North Korea. Most surprising, one of the most unilaterally oriented administrations has taken a multilateral approach to resolving one of the world's thorniest conflicts by getting other Arab states to buy into the proposal. To entice the Palestinians, the Trump administration has pledged to drum up investments of $28 billion over 10 years to support Palestine, with $22 billion of additional funding going to Jordan, Egypt, and Lebanon. Many Palestinians will likely not accept anything that smells like a payoff, especially when it includes so many poison pills. First, before Palestinians can unlock any benefit, the Hamas government in Gaza must renounce its anti-Israel ideology or somehow be removed from power. Second, the Trump plan would allow the state of Palestine to build a capital on the outskirts of East Jerusalem, but only in areas east of the existing separation barrier. Third, the state of Palestine would control just 70% of the West Bank, in contrast to the 94% to 96% proposed by Bill Clinton in 2000. Finally, the administration limit on the Palestinian, quote, right of return, unquote, even within a sovereign Palestinian nation, is a serious obstacle for any truly free country. It's clear that this proposal will not lead to peace in the coming months, or maybe ever. The Palestinians rejected the plan, and their leaders will make their anger clear. According to my conversations with senior Trump administration officials, they have already told Israeli and Arab leaders that territory is specifically open for negotiation should the Palestinians decide to engage after having refused to talk for more than 2 years. This plan is central to Trump's Middle East strategy. As the conflict becomes more marginal to the interests of the region's key actors, and the U.S. has generally become less interested too, Arab-Israeli normalization is only a matter of time, and the Palestinians are at risk of missing that train. Entire article by Ian Bremmer. We move to a major section entitled Health, where the headline is, Containing a Crisis. Are we doomed to a future of relentless viral outbreaks? Question mark. Article by Alice Park and Charlie Campbell. Dateline, Wuhan. And they write, The year of the rat is off to an ominous start. Quote, We just stay home and don't go out, unquote, says Mr. Dong, the 33-year-old researcher who provided only one name, has no other options. He, his wife, and their 3-month-old daughter live in Wuhan, the epicenter of an unfolding global health crisis. They're treating the forced time at home as a holiday, though he says, quote, this is different than any of them before, unquote. Families like his huddle in their homes, fearful that if they venture out, they will get sick. Since the first cases of a previously unknown pneumonia-like illness emerged in December, Wuhan, the capital of Hubei province, has frozen in place. 10-lane thoroughfares lie empty after a ban on personal cars, and buses and subways sit silent. Lunar New Year 2020 was stripped of its traditional fireworks, boisterous gatherings around overflowing tables of food and drink, and happy reunions with family and friends. As researchers and public health officials scramble to learn as much as they can about the new virus, how easily it transmits among people and how deadly it is, fears swamp this city of 11 million. The disease responsible is caused by a coronavirus that's never infected people before. Conflicting advice about how infectious the virus might be are swirling through the internet, along with misinformation about exactly where the virus, dubbed 2019-n-lowercase-c-lowercase-o-uppercase-v, came from. And I'll repeat that identity again. The name of the virus, 2019-n-uppercase-c-lowercase-o-uppercase-v. Hospitals in Wuhan are besieged by the sick, and only a handful of clinics are able to test for the disease. Coronaviruses make up a family of viruses that live mainly in animals. Parenthetically, bats are a favorite, but also include strains that contribute to the common cold in people. Only recently have they become more threatening, causing two deadly global pandemics in the past two decades. Severe acute respiratory syndrome, parenthetically SARS, that is S-A-R-S, all caps, SARS in 2002 and 2003, and Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, parenthetically MERS, that is M-E-R-S, all caps, MERS in 2012. Each new outbreak adds a fresh urgency to the question of whether public health officials could be doing more to confront the threat from emerging infections in general and coronaviruses in particular. The numbers will have climbed by the time you read this, but as of January 29th, the new virus had claimed at least 133 lives and sickened more than 6,000 people across 18 countries, including at least 5 cases in the U.S. While the World Health Organization, parenthetically WHO, has not declared a, quote, public health emergency of international concern, unquote, which would entail more stringent monitoring and containment of infected people, China's President Xi Jinping is treating it as a national emergency. He ordered an unprecedented quarantine of Wuhan, banning travel in and out of the city on January 22nd. A few days later, he extended the quarantine to a dozen cities in Hubei province. Xi also took the unusual step of extending the official Lunar New Year holiday to discourage millions from traveling back to work and further seeding new infections around China. Faster than the virus itself, fear has spread around the globe. In the U.S., designated airports quickly instituted screening programs to identify passengers on Wuhan-originating flights with signs of fever, cough, or difficulty breathing, and to immediately direct them to hospital isolation wards. Numerous airlines canceled flights to and from China. Asian stock markets that weren't closed for the Lunar New Year plummeted. In the U.S., Europe, and Asia, shortages of surgical face masks were reported. The emergence of a powerful new infectious virus for which there is, as yet, no vaccine should scare us, of course. But at the same time, humans are better equipped to fight these kinds of outbreaks than ever before. New technologies, especially ones that make possible the sequencing of any living thing's genetic blueprint, are finally giving us a meaningful advantage over microbes. We can map the genome of a virus, for example, which provides valuable clues about how it spreads, and helps us figure out how our immune systems can best battle it. The finest scientific minds are doing just that with coronaviruses in the hope that epidemics do not have a chance to mushroom into pandemics. The question now is how quickly we can transmit that knowledge to every corner of the world, especially to China, where in some places the flow of information is tightly controlled by a paranoid state. Researchers in London and Hong Kong have already warned that Beijing has dramatically underestimated the number of cases in Wuhan. Quote, for any disease outbreak, the best strategy is transparency, unquote, says Yuanzhong Wang, senior fellow for global health at the New York City-based Council on Foreign Relations. Quote, even taking into account the potential for panic, you need people to be prepared, unquote. With a government as opaque as China's, can we be sure that we are? And we have now run out of time for this edition of Time Magazine. We hope it has been informative. This is Randall Rickman reading to you on behalf of North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'll repeat, 919-832-5138. This is your reader, Randall Rickman, thanking you again for joining us for Time Magazine, and thank you for your patience with your reader's errors. So long until next time, please join us, because this time is your time.